The more we make space for our reality and we honor that, and then we do show up more in alignment, it is just creating that ripple of change in your world. And in my opinion, it's something to celebrate, to honor. And again, in my opinion, it is how we create change, literally world change.
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips.
And your host, Jessica Gill.
As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Expanded Podcast. Jessica here. We are in the final week of the Manifestation Challenge. Oh my gosh, I don't know about you guys, but this has been such a powerful manifestation challenge for me. I feel like a completely new person on the other side of it. So many blocks, so much clarity that I've moved through and recognized, and also so many manifestations have come through from small to big. It's just wild. It has been our most effective manifestation challenge to date. We have so many testimonials, hundreds, thousands of testimonials from people who have manifested through the challenge, and we're still finishing up the last week. Be sure to check out our show notes. We have a link for a little survey. If you guys have participated in the challenge, let us know how it was for you. What did you manifest? What was coming through? Share your testimonials, help expand other people. If you join the challenge and you haven't finished yet, or you're like, damn, I really think I want to do the challenge, we're going to leave it open until March 1st. So even if you start today, you can finish out the entirety of the challenge by the time that we close it out on March 1st. So you are not too late. You can still join at any time. And for anyone who may have gone through the challenge, I gave some feedback on my socials for tips and insight, no matter what week you got stuck on or held up on, how to navigate. You can check that out in my challenge highlights. And also tune into the live call that Lacey and I had this past Wednesday. That's in challenge day 29. But for motivation for anyone who, you know, maybe is having difficulty jumping back in post-holidays, or they went through the unblocking work and a lot came up and they needed some space, pick it back up as it suits you and fits you. Even just 20 minutes a day during the weekdays, carve out a little ritual for yourself and slowly start stepping back in. So if you're stuck on any one particular week, just keep moving forward. You know, the unblocking work is continuous. We'll continue to do it even after the challenge. That's what our daily practice is all about. It's those moments where we can return to self, where we can check in with our mental state, check in with our physical bodies, and see what is coming up and how to navigate it and having the tools to do so. So I hope you guys all love the challenge. I'm excited for those of you who may be just starting the challenge, and can't wait to see what manifestations lie on the other side. Today's episode, we have on Dr. Nicole LaPera. She's returning for the third time on the Expanded Podcast, and we are so excited to have her on. She was trained in clinical psychology at Cornell University, the New School for Social Research, the Philadelphia School of Psychoanalysis. She's the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, How to Do the Work, and podcast host of Self Healers Soundboard. You probably know her from her Instagram or social media accounts, The Holistic Psychologist, where she gives a lot of practical tips in navigating and understanding different layers or blocks or patternings about yourself. And her latest book, How to Meet Yourself, the workbook for self-discovery, was released on December 6th, is all about actual practical tools that you can go to, journal in order to help regulate yourself, check in with your authenticity, who you truly are, and really take inventory when you are having big emotions or difficulties coming up. It's a really cool practical guide, and I was really excited to dive into it before we recorded this episode. And today's episode is all about peeling back the layers and understanding what is in the way from us showing up and connecting as our authentic, highest, most embodied self. It really starts in the nervous system, and Dr. Nicole gives us some incredible practical tips of how to regulate our nervous system, how when we're in the moment of a trigger, being more prepared and equipped to handle triggers starts with creating a baseline of calm. And then we dive into what that means for someone who might be neurodivergent or particularly sensitive to their surroundings and how to regulate their nervous system to another level. And we also dive into family patterns, recognizing where our needs perhaps weren't met and understanding that it doesn't have to be such an extreme case. Sometimes our needs not being met in childhood could be very subtle, but made a big impact on our bodies and our nervous systems as adults. It is chock full of information, so I know you guys are going to love this one and have really good insights and takeaways. I hope you enjoy.
And now a word from our partners. Lacey here, quickly interrupting the episode to talk about Bond Charge, formerly Blue Blocks. So I want to start today by saying that I really do actually think that I manifested this particular product, which is the Bond Charge Infrared Sauna Blanket. A few months ago, Bond Charge released this, and it was literally a manifestation and answer to my prayer for a couple of reasons. One, you can go in completely naked. Two, it has the lowest EMF on the market, which is a big, big, big thing for me. Three, their lights are lab grade IR light power, which means that they have one of the highest therapeutic infrared lining in their sauna blanket. So I got it, tried it once, have used it every single day since. It takes literally under 2 minutes to warm up to the temperature that I want to use, whereas every infrared sauna I've had, of course, they're large devices. They take anywhere, depending on what the outside weather is, from 30 minutes to an hour to warm up. Needless to say, I have completely canceled the order to the infrared sauna that I was purchasing and waiting for in January. There's no point because once I've done the sauna blanket, I can't go back to that. I can't go back to waiting for it to warm up. And one of my pet peeves, even though this one was going to be larger that I ordered, is that I can't just lie down totally comfortably. So in the Bond Charge infrared sauna blanket, I lay it right down on my mattress. I plop my pillow sort of inside of it, lying in my bed, so comfortable, looking out my window, just seeing oak trees in the mountains and letting my nervous system completely calm down, which happens instantly in this. You can feel it. My whole nervous system grounds. That's a huge benefit of infrared saunas. And I think it's much quicker in a sauna blanket. It's the ultimate hack. And I was going to pay $8,000 for a sauna. This is $999. I'm just like, oh my gosh, thank you, universe. I manifested my perfect, perfect biohacking device. It packs up in its tiny little bag and I can take it from Topanga up to the forest house with me. It takes up such little space. It's just genius. So if somebody's looking for all of that inside of a package, it's definitely the Bond Charge infrared sauna blanket. If you are new to Bond Charge, use the code all caps magnetic, MAGNETIC, to receive 15% off your purchase. Again, that's all caps MAGNETIC to receive 15% off any purchase. All right, on to the episode.
Dr. Nicole LaPera, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the Expanded Podcast. This is your third time on. You are one of our most listened to guests. Everyone loves the conversations every time you come on, and we're so excited to have you again. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's actually start. You know, one question we usually have is, what is your cultural background and upbringing? And I'm pretty sure you've answered that before already for us, and people know your background and all of that. But one question I was curious with is, what is a childhood need that perhaps wasn't met that you are now able to meet yourself?
Oh, really, really great question. So it's interesting because when I think about it, for a long time, I probably would have proclaimed nothing. I had all of my needs met in childhood. And I've really come to realize how emotionally I didn't have that attuned parent figure, really anyone in my family, but my mom, who was present to me the most in physical care of me in terms of emotional, again, based on her own past, her own trauma, was largely unable to be with me and my emotions. So I came to realize how much I suppressed my emotional world and how I'm still very much in a learning process, how to make myself vulnerable to my own emotions and then how to share my emotions and of course, ask for support in the relationships that I'm in. So I'm learning to meet the need. I'm very much still a work in progress because, as I think is the case with all of us, when we're unfamiliar, even as something as basic as being emotionally connected, I think all of us humans, you know, are wired to do that and desire it. It's so unfamiliar. So it still very much feels vulnerable. And I can still see many moments where, you know, I'm resistant to it, I'm uncomfortable, and I'm squirmy about it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely resonate there. People think that they are expressing their emotions and really they're expressing a behavior. You know, they'll say, I feel like you did X, Y, Z. Well, that's not a feeling. Let's go back to, you know, our feelings wheel here. And I think that, you know, you have a lot of posts about especially communication and relationship, but having the vernacular to really say what you mean is so important. What are some tools or maybe even ways that you kind of check yourself or guide others to check themselves when they're trying to really understand, wait, what am I actually feeling? What is the feeling going on here?
I really, really love this question, Jessica, in so many ways, because I think naturally we do go to that step of expressing it, right? What is the word? How do I describe what it is that I'm feeling? And the reality, I think, for most of us is, you know, when we are under-supported in our emotions, it's often at a time where we don't have language. For many of us, and again, speaking from my own personal experience, it is really difficult to know the label of what it is that I'm feeling. You know, as I often do, I like to break down change, the process of healing in a way for most of us, into two steps. And the first step, as it applies to this conversation, is first becoming aware of the sensations in our body, because that's where emotions live. Our energy shifts, it changes. We feel things happening in our physical vessels. So to simplify that step, it would be becoming conscious of our physical body, which is why the new workbook, How to Meet Yourself, begins with that step of reconnecting with our physical self before we even enter into the second section, which is the emotional piece of things. So becoming conscious, learning to talk about or to label the sensations without even, before we even apply the feeling that that might connect to, learning how to just be in our own presence with what is going on in our physical body. And for so many of us, the first step actually then begins with reconnecting with our physical body, especially, again, if we were under-supported in childhood. We do what a lot of us do. We avoid our physical sensations. We learn how to disconnect or dissociate, like I like to call living on my spaceship. So for me, it was really reconnecting, becoming conscious of my human form before I could then begin to say, okay, this is the language of the feeling that is happening in my physical body.
Such a good point. Yeah. And you have great exercises in there, especially check-ins of like this time of day, what are the sensations going on in my body when I wake up before I grab my phone or look at the sun or my meditation, you know, whatever you choose to do first thing, what's the sensations already coming up? And then it's almost like a roadmap to, okay, so does that connect to the beliefs that you're looping behind? Does that connect to, you know, the worry that you have about the day? But that first checkpoint being what's happening in my body and regulating that, I think is so powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to go back to the reality that some of us might be starting with the behavior, right? With what we're doing. We're exploding, we're screaming, we're yelling, or you might find yourself like me, I'm disconnected. I've avoided the situation. I've fled. I've left the room. I've shut the person down or whatever it is. So I do want to speak to the reality that for so many of us, that's our starting point. We catch ourselves
maybe in the action of reacting, or oftentimes after the fact, oftentimes feeling very shameful after the fact of what we've done. But that could be our starting point, because understanding that those explosive, whether we're exploding outward or we're turning inward with those emotions, the behavior, the reaction that you very beautifully brought up is connected to how we were feeling, to that deeper discomfort. So for so many of us, it means, you know, starting there, kind of seeing after the fact and witnessing those patterns without judging them, understanding that they are, you know, coming from an attempt at safety. Again, when we were in that pre-verbal stage, when we didn't have the attuned caregiver to hold space, to be curious, to help us make sense and give us language about what we were feeling and then find an appropriate, connected way to deal with it, we learned, we adapted. And so many of us into our adulthood carry on those habitual coping mechanisms. And again, we shame ourselves because they do cause ourselves harm. They cause our loved ones harm. But if we can, again, expand in compassion, which is why I'm always talking about the physiology, the nervous system, kind of where these things are originating from, then I think we can give ourselves the opportunity to even just start there. Okay, I am someone who explodes. I don't know exactly what's happening in my body, but I can have some language now for the reality that I didn't feel safe in what is happening in my body. So I felt like I had to project it outward, or I had to turn it inward, or I had to avoid it. And then we can almost start building the pieces backward in that way.
Yeah, I think definitely in my own healing journey, I know after I'm like, ooh, I should have taken a pause. I should have stepped back before that happened. And it's the practice of recognizing as soon as you can, really, where did something shift? Where do I no longer, you know, things started spiraling out, and then take it step by step backwards until recognizing the physiological shift immediately is going to be your first cue.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate you saying that. And I think it's important to speak to that, because we set up this expectation that we are conscious in real time and sensing these shifts in our body so that we can pause and be responsive. And in the lived experience of life, that's just not what happens. What happens more often the time is we reconnect with our consciousness, you know, somewhere after the fact. And if we can, again, be compassionate observers of what's happening, we can then create an opportunity to hit pause, to be able to attune to my body, be in its own presence, sense what I may be feeling in terms of the sensations, and have that bit of space now in real time to show up responsively and compassionately and in a connected way. But again, if we set up the expectation that you listen to a podcast like this and now you go and I say, like, flip the light switch and now you're, you know, different in real life, we're going to set ourselves up to be very disappointed. And again, to just continue to create that shame cycle.
You know, one tip my therapist gave me is recognizing whatever part of the journey where you feel activated, say, okay, the only thing I need to do here is go and take a pause and calm my nervous system down. And at first I was like, well, shouldn't I figure out why I'm feeling that way? Or she goes, your prefrontal cortex isn't online. You don't have the capacity to do that at that moment. So if you can just remember to exit and self-soothe for a moment, that's going to be your best chance at rewiring that pattern. Are there any other tools or tips that you would suggest for someone, like when they're in that elevated state, whether they're disassociating or whether they're projecting out anger, or maybe they're even just like so upset with someone, resentment's bubbling up, or anger internally and they're turning it inward, which is another thing that happens to people too.
Yeah, I want to acknowledge your therapist for giving you a very, you know, good piece of advice and piece of information, physiological information about how our brain functions. And we don't have access to that moment of different awareness. We don't, and that's why so many of us rely on those ways that you just beautifully stated, that the old ways that we've once dealt with it. When our prefrontal cortex isn't online, we can't see a new solution. That beautiful solution that you might have even talked about with that therapist last Tuesday, right, in session, you don't actually have access to that in real time, which is why we return to those past solutions, screaming, yelling, dissociating, leaving, or whatever it is. And I think that another helpful suggestion, and this is, I think, often counterintuitive and maybe not what we like to hear, begins outside of those moments, begins with caring for our nervous system, with understanding that we do have a nervous system and
that ability to maintain connection to the pause, to the prefrontal cortex, to all of the new different solutions that you want to embody to make that change happens when our nervous system is in a calm state of grounded, peaceful regulation. And I'll be the first to admit, I spent decades of my life the farthest from that grounded, peaceful state. So for a lot of us, it's the more preventative, I think is the language listeners might have heard, care of our bodies, making sure that we're getting and giving it the nutrients that we have access to that it needs, making sure sleep is incredibly important, that it's getting prioritized just as much as sleep, restful moments throughout our day. I mean, we live in a culture now where a lot of us are being actually validated and affirmed by endlessly doing all of the time. Our nervous system needs those moments to be in peace, to be in calm. Our body also needs to, at some points, move to discharge its energy. So by building in, as I often, we talk about in my membership, the Self-Healer Circle, a commitment to shifts, small daily promises to create new habits. Because of course, I even just, voiced three different things we could start doing differently. We have to understand that, especially when it comes to our body, especially when it comes to our nervous system, the more change we try to pile on, and I think it's a beautiful time of year to be talking about this with New Year's resolutions. And a lot of us, for very understandable reasons, want to reshape our life, want to start eating differently, start sleeping differently, start moving differently. And because our subconscious mind will always register the unfamiliar, or will always register the possibility of threat, I should say, in the unfamiliar, the more expectation we put on ourselves to revamp our life overnight, the more likely we're going to feel that resistance, to feel uncomfortable, and to return back to those old habits. So by caring for our body might mean making a daily commitment and getting really consistent with maybe eating in a different way, sleeping in a different way, allowing rest in a different way. And then over time, the more we're caring for our nervous system, the more then we have access in those moments of reactivity to return to that peaceful balance that now we've been practicing outside of those moments.
That is such a good point. And I feel like you really gave sort of the science context behind why just brute force in your goals is not actually the most effective path if you're looking for lasting change. Because quite literally, at the base level, your nervous system is not feeling safe in these new behaviors. And so taking it slow and steady and incremental is allowing space for your nervous system to catch up to the new behavior, to really instill the new habit, and for it to feel like second nature.
100%. And, I will speak from one of my ways I've learned to cope. In addition to being so disconnected, one of the gifts of being so disconnected from my body was I was always on the go. I was always overstepping its limits. I didn't have any moments of feeling comfortable or safe enough in stillness to allow my nervous system to come back into that peace and that calm. So learning how to stop and how to create safety in stopping, how to teach my body that it's okay to relax in that moment. And here's where we can be very intentional. And I often like to shout out deep belly breathing because it's something we can do no matter who is around. No one even has to know that what we're doing in that moment is we're actually shifting our sympathetic nervous system that's probably holding all the tension in our body. I know for me, I would proclaim all I have ever wanted in life is two things, peace and freedom. I felt so desirous of those two states. Yet if I did have a moment, say a Sunday, where I had none of the plans, none of the obligations to do anything, and I could hypothetically be peaceful, my body was so tense, so stressed, because I'd carried all of this dysregulation from my childhood where I didn't have support in returning back to that safety, that it was only a matter of time before I was, that agitation that was internal was showing up in my racing thoughts, in me almost shaming myself because I can't be sitting here and resting. There's a million things I could or should be doing. Or if I had the gift of a relationship around me, they then had the gift of me agitating the relationship, picking a fight. So I like to give that example because I think it's a very common one where so many of us want peace and calm, though our bodies in that moment is not relaxed. Peace and calm doesn't feel safe for many different reasons. So helping our body along by deep belly breathing, by anchoring our awareness, by turning our attention, that is, to the present moment, instead of focusing on the racing thoughts that are just going to keep the tension in my body, maybe choose to focus on the soft chair that you're sitting on, or the bed or the couch that you're laying on. And again, of course, it doesn't happen overnight. We literally have to unwind all of these years of tension so that peace and calm can begin to feel safer for our body. So that, again, flash forward in time, when we want to stay grounded, as our body is very much reacting to something stressful happening in our environment, now our body is more familiar with that state and we can return back to that grounded presence and then be responsive in how we're choosing.
And I wonder too, you know, in those moments, it seems as if you have a baseline of a grounded calm, when you get out of it, you can notice that more. If your baseline is fragile irritation and your threshold is so low for anything to come into its sphere that's going to set you off, the gap between peace and calm is very far. But if you're usually at peace and calm and then you shift out, you're like, whoa, that feels different. I'm not used to being in this different state.
Yeah, absolutely. This is why I think so many of us can relate to like the straw that broke the camel's back, always waiting for the next shoe to drop. For me, I was the word that comes to mind is irritable person. It didn't take much for me to, you know, lose any semblance of peace and calm. And I'm using kind of the bunny ears here because I was never really peace and calm in my body. It did take just that little irritation, someone looking at me the wrong way, a dish being out of place. And I quite literally would go into some cycle of reactivity. And what we're talking about here in terms of the science of it all is widening our window of tolerance, learning how to tolerate more and more discomfort, allowing our body to become activated, and then also to return back to that peaceful, calm, grounded baseline. And then we want to gradually widen that window so that as we go about life, because the reality of it is we can't control what's happening around us. We can't control who's looking at us, which way, and whether or not the dish is going to be left on as much as we would like to. We can't control necessarily the world around us. So what we can do is expand our ability to tolerate the discomfort of what's happening around us. And of course, then use that discomfort if it does get too great, if it is violating us or making us unsafe in some way, to inform then the new choices that we're making by removing ourselves if we have the ability to, by putting up boundaries, by then changing our circumstances. But again, back to the point is that very few of us have that ability to tolerate the different stresses of life. And then we return in those moments to those old habitual ways that we once learned to create some semblance of safety control in our earliest environments. But of course, now we're in an adult body, right? Mm-hmm. Doing that and many times shaming ourselves and feeling very badly. And again, causing ourselves or other people discomfort in the way we're reacting.
One thing that really comes to mind too that I think about is people who are neurodivergent. Like my fiance has ADHD and his sensitivity to sound, other external pieces is very, very high. Even this morning, he was like, oh, can you believe all the noise outside? And I like woke up out of a deep sleep. I was like, what noise? And he's like, oh my gosh, the truck and the neighbors and this and that. Like he was so sensitive to so many things. So is it just for people who are identifying with that or feel a lot more sensitive, their nervous system is a lot more activated, especially by sounds, smells, space, et cetera. Is it widening that tolerance window? Is it, again, you know, more boundaries over the spaces they're in, earplugs? I mean, what are some other good suggestions there?
So I appreciate you sharing that, Jessica, because I too, one of my partners, Lolly, is very neurodivergent in those ways, very sensitive to sound and, you know, a little bit of both, right? When we have the opportunity to create change in our physical environments, you know, putting up boundaries, relocating, you know, or doing things to put a buffer. If we, again, of course, we have the resources and opportunity to do that, and some of us might not have that, then it might be putting buffers. I mean, Lolly walks around with headphones. We'll always, you know, when we're out and even myself, and we are all energetic creatures. I think mm-hmm. that's important to note here. It's a spectrum. It's not like some of us aren't sensitive to the energies in the environment around us. We all are. We just have different, again, degrees of sensitivity. So ultimately, I too will walk around with big noise-canceling headphones around if it does feel too overstimulating when I'm out. And she makes, you know, I tease her because she's always even in the home with those headphones on. And if you can't afford the noise canceling headphones, I know most pharmacies, drugstores have the little earplugs you can put and muffle the sound in that way. So first, I think my first suggestion is becoming aware that you are energetically sensitive, tuning into your body and how these different environments do impact you, because some of us might not even have that awareness that, you know what, when I go out into crowds, I do feel much more uncomfortable. So that's a big piece of awareness to have, so that now once you become conscious of that sensitivity in yourself, now you can begin to make those new choices and modify your environment when you can, give yourself tools like headphones, like earplugs or whatever it might be, so that you can learn and or choose not to go when you have that opportunity as well. I think it's important to also state that. If you don't have the resources available to you, if you're not sleeping well, if you're stressed out because you have a lot going on in your life or emotional things are happening for you, that might not be the time to go to the loud concert that you know is already going to be stressful for your sensitive nervous system. So again, this is one of those preemptive solutions of knowing yourself enough to possibly modify your plans and decline that invitation, not put yourself in that environment if you can make that choice not to, if you don't have the ability or the resources in that moment to tolerate what might come up for you in terms of your sensitivity.
Okay, now this is a bit of a pivot from that, but I think ties in a little bit, especially around the nervous system piece, hypervigilance. So talk a bit about what it is, how it's essentially formed, and how people can start to recognize, because I think a lot of people pleasers, people that identify as empaths, might have hypervigilance and not really be aware of the impact that that is actually having on their nervous system. I know for me personally, it was a big aha moment when I recognized, oh, if someone is in a bad mood around me, I actually don't need to fix it. I can allow them to be in their own mood and not run to, you know, try to manipulate the situation so everything feels peaceful again. I can feel peaceful and they can have their own separate experience and we're good. But feeling like I needed to do that was a learned behavior. So talk a bit about that too.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really great example. Those of us who are really sensitive to shifts in people's mood, shifts in people's tones, shifts in people's behaviors, right? We're always looking outward. We're always scanning the environment. Maybe it's internal. We're always worried about what other people are thinking, how they're feeling. It could be more something that's happening internally in our mind. And speak to your point of it being a learned behavior, chances are in childhood, if your environment was unpredictable, if you had that explosive parent, being attuned to their cues, their shifts in moods helped keep you safe because you could leave the room, you could avoid them in some way, or you could not do the thing that you know might result in them being explosive, was probably your best strategy. For me, it looked a little bit less like explosiveness. What I had learned very early on in my family is there was a high level of constant stress from the fact that we were living in a city, a very crime-ridden city where there was always something happening and I was always receiving messages about the dangers out there, to the fact that I had a lot of health issues happening in my mom and my sister in particular, my two core caregivers in many ways. What I learned very early was there's a lot of anxiety present, and if I didn't add to it, if I didn't give my mom something to worry about by sharing the difficult thing that happened at school with me, if I didn't add stress right to the already overstressed system, then I could keep myself somewhat safer. It felt a little bit more tolerable. So I like to share that again, because it doesn't necessarily have to look like having the explosive, unpredictable parent, though that's one avenue by which hypervigilance develops, but it could be a little bit more indirect. The result is the same. We became safe at some early unsafe environment, physically or emotionally, right? We got our needs met to the best of our ability by attuning to the world around us. And then I started, very much like many of us do, to use language like, I'm just so concerned about you. I just have so much compassion. I want to show up right in service of you and tend to you in your moods, not realizing that there were no boundaries in my childhood. I didn't have, as you beautifully put it, the ability to say, okay, you're having your mood over there and I have the space to have my mood, which is different. And we can still be connected in different emotional spaces. Without that, because stress
in my family just went around like a cyclone through all of us, I very much like you, not only became hyper vigilant to the environment, I shifted into this people pleasing mode. And I very much didn't feel, and I still struggle to separate when I'm having a different mood or an emotional experience or idea or thought or way of being in any moment from other people. And again, because it developed at a time when being outward focused kept ourselves safe, so many of us continue with those externally focused patterns, that hypervigilance, that people pleasing. We tell ourselves things like, oh, I'm just caring and worried and compassionate about you, not understanding that oftentimes in service, quote unquote, of you, we're overstepping our own needs, our own boundaries, and our own emotions. So we're suppressing them to show up in service of you. So we think, not realizing, because where that tape usually plays out to is I get mad, upset, and resentful of you, of the world around me, not seeing the role that I'm playing. And again, not understanding that the role that I'm playing was my best attempt at keeping myself safe at an early environment.
That is so key to remember. All of the sort of programming that comes up for everyone, all of the behaviors that are coming up, I think having the moment of compassion, and you talk about compassion a lot, but having that moment of compassion that this was serving me. I did need this to survive in the environment. This was the best solution to the situation that I was in. And now it's not serving me anymore. And how can I move it? Because I think without having that compassion, we're like, oh God, I have so much shit, or I have all these problems, or, you know, so you can start to see how it can turn into that self-shame. And I just want anyone out there listening to really take in that actually was a benefit to you at one time, and it's okay. And now it's about the consciousness and reprogramming that.
And to take it a step further, because, right, it kept us safe, our subconscious, our neurophysiology, our body is still reliant on that for safety purposes. So it's not going to go away overnight. You're not going, again, listen to us speak about this and be able to get rid of that habit, unless, of course, you learn other ways to create safety for yourself, your body. Again, I very intentionally created a workbook about how to meet your authentic self. And you don't get to meet that authentic self until section 3, because until, again, we're connected with our body, we know how to create safety in our body. We begin to explore our emotions and these deep-rooted patterns that our inner child and our ego is holding onto, coloring all of these moments of reactivity. We're not going to have that space. So your point, I think, is so important, Jessica, to reiterate, which is that because it is aimed at safety, we don't want to get rid of it overnight. Our body, our nervous system won't allow us to until, again, we teach ourselves, our physiological body, how to find safety in other ways. Again, this is where we can't just white knuckle it and be like, okay, well, you know, whether or not I can be compassionate and remove the shame, I still want to stop doing it. We have to embody new choices, do new things with our physiological body, with our nervous system, before we can release those patterns. And I think just coming from a traditional world where we had this idea that we could just talk about something in a therapy session, again, if we had access to it, and have some new insight, and then therefore actualize that by doing something different. The big piece that was missing, at least in my work, was the body, the actual making of new choices to retrain my nervous system in new ways to feel safe. Because again, it won't get rid of it until we make those new choices.
I guess it's different for every person, but like, what would be your protocol for someone who in that hypervigilant state, right? They typically mesh with the other person's need, they put them before them, and now they're aware of it. They're okay, I know why I did this. This happened in childhood. Got it. Makes sense. And now they're faced with an opportunity to repeat that cycle, continue that pattern, mesh with the behavior, or they can say, oh boy, my body feels so uncomfortable doing this, but I'm going to go take my own energy. Is it the action? And then the action is uncomfortable at first, and eventually after self-soothing, then it can become safe feeling? Or is it a combination of here are the tools I can do to feel safe, get that baseline bolstered, then when the situation arises, then I can go and, you know, take that new action?
Yes, it is. Having the awareness that it's a pattern, creating the opportunity to know how to create safety in our bodies, and then also navigating
the narratives in our mind, because chances are, if you're like me, making those very beautiful, empowered moments to separate your energy, to go do the new thing that's going to create safety, we still have all of these beliefs and these narratives literally in neural networks in our subconscious mind that's going to tell you how selfish it is to do that, how it's wrong, how you're a bad person to do that, how guilty you should feel for doing that. So it's working with the body. I know we've been focusing on that, but also the mind, right? So for me, I'll just share my examples of, I could logically know that I'm a mesh, that I need to create boundaries, that I need this time away to learn how to ground myself in my own energy. And in the moment of doing that, all of those stories, all of those narratives can come washing over me of how it's selfish, how dare I have a need that's different from what someone else. They could need me in this moment. And now I'm being a bad friend, a bad partner. I feel guilty. I used to call them my feel bads, and they're still very present. So it's all of it, being aware of the pattern, giving yourself the opportunity to make new choices or embody a new space in our nervous system of safety, and also learning how to navigate the mind, because the mind and body are connected. So chances are in those moments, you're going to have some version of why you shouldn't be doing that which it is that you need to do. So the practical kind of tool in the moment is first to be aware of what your mind is telling you, all of this old deep-rooted belief that you've been operating from outside of your awareness, even maybe celebrate that you're able to see those feel bad thoughts or those guilt-inducing thoughts or those shaming thoughts, and then learn how to refocus that attention away, not spending time thinking in that thought loop, refocusing your attention maybe on your physical body and the shifts that you're now starting to feel, on something that is now in your external environment. And chances are you're going to have to do that again and again, because again, like that light switch, my thought's not like, oh, you don't want to feel guilty right now? Okay, I'll just let you be, do your thing, right? The next reminder of how you're a bad person, how you're a selfish person, how you shouldn't be doing this. We all love to think in shoulds and shouldn'ts, comes up in your mind. And then you could use that beautiful muscle of attention and say, thank you, a thought, just like my body, you're trying to keep me safe, right? You believe that being enmeshed with this person was safety at one point, and now I can put my focus somewhere else. And then over time, then you get to feel differently in mind and in body in those moments. And again, bringing it full circle, and in very many ways, I still see that tendency to feel bad, to feel guilty, to feel that discomfort in my body and in my mind. And just like we're teaching our body to expand in terms of discomfort, we're teaching our mind to do the same.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
One section of the book that I really liked is the journaling with the inner critic and having the conversation with that, which is sort of the feel bads that you're talking about here, right? It's like really pulling them apart. One thing that was like a big aha moment for me this year was I started doing IFS, internal family systems therapy, and understanding the parts. And now for me, it's just so helpful to see, oh, this behavior with this nervous system response, let's say the hypervigilant example even, this behavior, this nervous system response is a protector of sorts. It's a firefighter of sorts. And it is trying to protect the inner child that felt really, really scared. And then realizing, okay, now my job as my higher self that's in there, even though I feel enmeshed with my, you know, protector part, my higher self is still in there. And the job now is how do we soothe this activated part so the inner child also feels safe? And something about turning it into these outside pieces of me instead of I am hypervigilant. It's like, no, one part of me is hypervigilant as a trauma response. Really helps in contextualizing the whole process and even being able to show up for the different versions of you. Have you found that? How do you see the inner critic play out and all of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, this conversation of learning how we are multidimensional beings and how to embrace that in the language of our thoughts, in these moments where we're actually, and beautiful the podcast, expanding, mm-hmm. right? To hold more space, because so many of us, especially if they've been subconscious habits that we've been repeating on that autopilot since literally the moment, right? We came into creation here, we become merged. And especially again, if we are stuck in cycles of nervous system dysregulation, we become our emotions. We become those habitual reactive parts of us. Some of us might even start languaging where we identify ourselves in that comprehensive way. So again, when we first, I should say, become conscious of the fact that we are merging that, we're becoming our feeling, we're becoming our protector part, we're making it all of our experience. And I often pause with that state of consciousness, that awareness that we're first doing that, because to create change, we have to consciously see where we're at right now. We don't have to be shameful of that. So many of us have merged our identity with parts of our experience, especially if that's been the part that's been most active, that's kept us most safe in the environments that we've most consistently found ourselves in. It's natural then that we do feel we've become that identity. So it is something to celebrate, becoming aware that we have been using language that has colored a part of our experience is all of our experience, or our habitual reaction is all of who we are. And that was really the intention with my first book too, how to do the work, is understanding that who we really are is so much more than these subconscious habits that we've been repeating. So the same goes, and I love IFS. I think it's such an incredibly helpful way to think about the multidimensionality of us as humans and to begin to then work with these parts. So becoming conscious, and again, just laboring this point, because so many of us minimize it. We're like, oh yeah, I've discovered that. That's great. That's some separation now. Now you can see that there was a lack of separation, and now you have a bit of space to begin to shift your language in those moments. I actually were just put up, I think it was on Twitter today, talking about how conflicting feelings are so difficult for humans. It's so hard to expand and say, I could feel in almost two oppositional ways about one thing, because we like to grab a part, say I'm just sad. We might be sad and a bit hopeful in the same moment. So anytime we notice when we're merging with a part of ourselves gives us the opportunity then to expand, whether it's in thought, whether it's in emotion. And the more we expand, the more then we can come into the presence of the wholeness of our being.
Yeah. Okay. Expand more on the opposite parts too, because I think that's a big thing. And one of the things I worked on this year, I had a really hard time having a consistent physical movement practice. And I was like, why is this so hard? Why do I feel like I'm clawing up a wall to try to get at this behavior that I know I want? I know I feel good afterwards. This brings me joy. It's good for my physical body. Like, why is it so hard to make this regular? And until when I looked down in the beliefs, I was like, oh, part of me does really want it and is so excited. And part of me still sees it in the old ways that I had when I had difficulty with eating disorders, which is this is punishment. And even though I've healed through those, that part that's like, no, this is punishment and we don't want to go back to this is punishment anymore. So until I could sit with and contextualize that part and say, hey, We're safe. We're not going to use this as punishment. We're not going to do that. I promise you, this is how it's going to be, and really hold space for it. Then I was able to have a regular fitness practice. But until I address those two conflicting parts, that normal practice would not have happened.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. And I'm smiling while you're sharing it, Jessica, because very much I struggle as well with keeping consistent, even though, again, logically, you heard me say movement, right? Move my body, regulate my nervous system. I habitually have avoided discomfort. And it goes back to what I was acknowledging earlier, right? I want freedom. I don't want to do things that are uncomfortable or hard, right? I want to feel peaceful in my body. And the reality of it is to stress our body isn't necessarily a bad thing. Though what I was modeled in my family was when things were physically uncomfortable, as having a mother, again, who struggled mainly with chronic pain, she avoided discomfort in her body. So I too learned, I was modeled, and I have language around all of the possible symptoms, you know, that could be problematic when your heart rate gets up, all of these reasons why to worry even about creating stress in your body. So then I became the human that embodied habits of avoiding discomfort in my body. So much like you, I have had to expand and acknowledge compassionately the part of me that doesn't like to feel physically uncomfortable. And that's okay. And I can hold space for the reality that stressing my body little by little consistently over time can help my body deal with more and more stress, not only physically, but emotionally, and can help me, again, returning full circle back, maintain the ability to return back to that grounded responsive space, not only when I'm physically uncomfortable in life, especially when I'm emotionally uncomfortable in life. So again, different scenarios, different, you know, past factors, though the same reality. There's part of me, again, logically, that knows and has even felt the benefit of learning how to be in my physical body doing hard things. And there's a part of me that doesn't want to have to do that, that doesn't want my body to feel uncomfortable in those ways. So holding space for both of it, acknowledging it, not shaming ourselves for it, then allows us to then make choices. And that's not to say that there aren't some days where I don't do it. And that's okay too, right? I'm not every day consistent on my routine. There's some mornings where I do honor either my body telling me it's tired and doesn't want to do it, or my mind telling me it's tired and I don't want to do it. Though I've created and returned to the habit consistently enough now that I don't worry about never going back again. I commit to being consciously present. And now I've learned that the further away I am from those consistent habits of moving, the more tension I feel, the more irritable I am in my emotions, and the more I'm not able to be calm and grounded and responsive in my life the way that I want to be in my heart. And I just lived this over the holidays. I was sick and I didn't move much. And before long, as I neared into week two of not really moving, I felt irritable. I felt agitated. I didn't like how my body felt. So as much as it's so difficult, I'll be the one to say it, to return to things that we've stopped doing for a little bit, I knew in my emotions and in my physical body that doing that actually did make me feel better. Even though I grunted through and hated every second of the first few days of returning, I had been my own proof, as my partner Jenna likes to say. I've given myself enough opportunity to be in my body and feel all the different ways of being so that in these moments, I can use that consciousness to direct my choices. Not because someone told me, not because I read in a book that it was good, because I started to feel agitated in my own self.
That is the power. And that is the authenticity too, right? To really understand what you uniquely need in your body for your nervous system that works for you. That isn't about ego validation, checking in with the world around you to show your social media you did a cool workout. You know, it's really for your own safety, peace, calm, and joy.
The nature of this new workbook is giving people the opportunity to get curious first and foremost, that they are a unique being, you know, beneath all of these layers, that there is a uniqueness and an individuality to them, and then giving them the tools to find their way back. And while, of course, even through this conversation today, I've shared what it is for me, you know, being even the community of self-healers. When I first created the Instagram account, I popped up that hashtag self-healers as a way to connect with other people who were curious about the same things that I was, who wanted to talk about the same things and
Now, of course, that's translated into my membership, the Self Healer Circle. And I'm always celebrating the community, whether you're inside or outside of the membership, because it's in all of us sharing our stories. It's not me saying, right, this is the one size fits all model. And I don't suggest anyone look to any other individual human as the comprehensive framework or model for healing to apply to them. Coming from a family where I do know we have had that tendency to look to other people to embody what it is for them. Again, we have the resources to go to a therapist to assume that doing things exactly like they tell us is going to work for us. And again, I am so in gratitude to individuals like yourself, communities like you have, that have these conversations, because it's as each of us show up as the unique individual that we are and share our pieces of our journey and what we've come to realize can then allow everyone to have more to hear from and to then pick from, and then to apply and see, because ultimately you're the person who gets to decide if it's in resonance with you, if it's going to work for you, if it's going to fit into all of the unique circumstances in the life that you've uniquely created around you. So I really appreciate kind of us going into that point of things, because again, while I will share, you know, my own individual journey, I'm never sharing it with the intention someone takes notes and immediately goes and applies exactly what it was for me. This is, again, why I even wrote this roadmap of how to meet yourself, to give everyone the opportunity to find their way back to themselves, that inner knowing that I know each of us have. Because what I can't tell you is what's going to happen tomorrow. None of us can predict the future, mm-hmm. you know, and I think the more we have that home base to return to, those feelings in our actual energetic system and in our body, then we can allow that to guide us into the unknown that is the future for all of us.
100%. So well said. We call it like having your toolkit. What is your toolkit that you can turn to in those moments? And something kind of just clicked when you were talking there too, that when you look out to one person to give you every answer for whatever subject you're looking on, you're giving your power away to that person. And remembering that you have the power, you have the autonomy for you, and you get to create your own toolkit of all the resources that work for you. And I also think too, when you are tapped in and connected with your authenticity and authentic self, when you hear someone talk about a certain tool, there is like an inner excitement that pops up. You're like, ooh, I think I'm going to like that one. That can be kind of your guiding post. One other question I want to ask you is, how do you define the authentic self? How do you view the authentic self? What does it mean to you?
You know, that's one of those elusive, difficult to verbalize spaces. So I think often you'll hear me define it in feelings, right? Mm-hmm. It's that feeling of connectedness first and foremost, right? That I'm not afloat on my spaceship or blanked out entirely and not in my own presence, that I could feel my physical body. I can feel the energies that are present. I can feel maybe the ease, like you're saying, or the excitement or the shift in energy into lightness that comes with something that resonates. It's for me very much, I embody my authentic self when I'm having conversations like this, where I'm in that flow state that a lot of listeners might have heard, where time goes away. I'm almost like, oh, geez, we've almost been here for almost an hour only because I'm looking at a clock right now, yeah. Right? It's as if the world has melted away and I'm literally just experiencing my energy of excitement that as I'm speaking, and I have chills right now as I'm even saying this, my body is registering that I'm in myself. I'm in that energy because I'm not as distracted by the world around me. I'm literally in now a feedback loop of what's feeling good of my own presence. So authentic self, again, simplifying the definition is our own presence, learning how it feels to be in that space of pure presence with ourself. And then of course, how that then reflects outward.
So good. One thing I wanted to touch on, this is kind of a little bit off track from where we were at, but I just think it's so powerful. You had shared a lot about when you have a personality type in your family dynamic, that everything revolves around that person's energy state, and it really dictates where the mood of the family goes. I mean, I guess it ties into the hypervigilance piece too. But talk more on that, because I think people were just home with their families. They had these experiences, especially if you're going home around your parents, you might revert back to those old childhood feelings, behaviors, et cetera. If someone has to go be around their family, What are ways that they can try to keep their own sovereignty and peace when they have someone that has that energy that the whole family meshes to? Mom's this way, or dad's this way, or brother's this way. We're all in this together with them. How do they carve out their own space when they're amongst that?
So noticing, will always be kind of the first step. And I don't say that step here lightly, because again, having lived the experience, it's difficult when we come into conscious awareness of these patterns that, we do share with our family members of having the parent, who tends to have the emotional climate revolve around them. I think there's a little part of each of us that feels bad, for lack of a better word, that almost shames ourselves for just acknowledging the objective reality of that, especially when it's with a parent. We go back to that childlike state of dependency where we need it, this individual, literally to keep us alive. And one of the most difficult things to experience in our emotions in childhood, that we have access to all of our emotions in childhood, is being angry with them. So instead of being angry with them, right, we squash that anger and we don't allow ourselves to see the reality, the pattern that, again, is often of no fault of their own, was probably what was modeled to them, the way they kept themselves safe in whatever family or cultural or contextual environment that they found themselves to be in. So acknowledging it, seeing it objectively to be the case that it is. And again, I'm speaking from my own lived experience, because it didn't look as much like explosive. We weren't tiptoeing around for me. Of course, again, it was mom. We weren't tiptoeing around mom because she was going to explode necessarily. We were more tiptoeing around concern for mom, for her health. We were hypervigilant to the possibility that she was having, or going into a chronic health issue or having pain that would then result in more stress or more disconnection from her. So that hypervigilance began. So I share that again, because it's not as overt. It's not as noticeable. If you don't have the explosive parent that's kind of eating up all of the emotions in the room, it could look like this more indirect or implicit revolving of emotions, though it's the same thing. So it's really difficult to acknowledge to our childlike self that we have a parent, right, who is that person who tends to have the emotional climate or even the behavioral climate of the family revolve around them and their moods. It's really challenging, again, that childlike part that struggles, beautifully enough, to expand and to say, while I might compassionately know that's the case, that is the case. And that has now had the consequence on me of not having space for me to be me, to have my needs met, to have an emotion that's different, or to want to do something that's different than what the family is doing or what they're tending to in that moment. And then when we become, of course, conscious with that reality, when we give ourselves then the space to grieve, to feel all the different angry ways, upset ways, disappointed ways that we feel about that, now we can begin, and I very much had to walk this journey myself, of creating boundaries, of maybe modifying. I was the child who, no matter where I was in the world, when I went home to visit, I was home for the entire weekend. I slept over in their house. It took me until I was in my mid-30s to make a visit home, to get a hotel room separate or to stay with a friend, and to go over for limited times around meals or around an afternoon out, right? I had this expectation that when I go home, I fully immerse myself in home. So it could be as practical as, again, acknowledging that you have that climate in your home, and then setting yourself up by making new choices, by putting up boundaries, by maybe declining to go home or going home in a different way, in a more limited way. And then, of course, holding space for the reactions that might happen, the internal, you feeling bad, you feeling guilty, you feeling like a bad kid for thinking this, for doing things differently, and also the external, because we have to, or it's helpful to honor the system of people that might not either be willing to see the reality or the truth as it is for us, or to accept these new choices. Because again, it's subconscious to them. We're all locked in this way of being, and it can be really challenging, and we can be met with, in addition to a lack of support, outright upset, people being angry with us, telling us why it is that we shouldn't be doing the things that we're doing.
I'm in awe of so many people on this journey, because to think that you are facing your innermost demons and then have the system that maybe wasn't working, you know, or was broken in some way, shape, or form, then fighting back at you for trying to find your own peace. It's like, dang, that's hard work. And I just give so much just awe and credibility to everyone who's out there doing this journey. I think it's so brave and so powerful.
I couldn't agree more, Jessica. And I always like to acknowledge, especially when I have the opportunity to speak to other communities, of, you know, how important it is to honor yourself in this process. Even the fact that you clicked onto this podcast today, the curiosity of listening to what for some of you might be really new ideas, that's very brave. Listening to things that are, again, unfamiliar to us might challenge our deep-rooted beliefs, might then, if we do actualize and begin to behave differently, it is incredibly courageous. And I think some of us so frequently skip over that step of being like, wow, good for me that I'm willing to hear these things, to take a look at myself in a new conscious way, and then even furthermore, to begin to act differently. Again, we are all humans. We all share that universal desire to stay in that familiar. So all of this, anytime you're faced with something new, thinking or doing something new, it is incredibly worthy of celebration, in my opinion.
And I really just want to thank you and acknowledge you for all the work you're doing, how much awareness you were helping people come to. I mean, I truly think your Instagram account is the number one shared account amongst me and all my friends, because even friends who are just starting or scratching the surface of this work, they're like, I didn't know about this. And they'll send it over to me. I'm like, yes, yes. So you are bringing so much awareness and potential for healing and growth for everyone out there, and for being so vulnerable and sharing your family dynamic and story. It is no easy feat to go down that rabbit hole and share that. So I really want to acknowledge the fact that that is a big deal, to be hearing the inside details of that. And hearing that is actually what helps people see their own versions of it. So thank you so much.
I really, really appreciate that. It took a lot of those old habits of creating the opportunity for me to be affirmed in my version of reality, and then let alone begin to share it, and then let alone begin to share it with so many, you know, eyes and ears on it. Because again, the reality of it is we're all filtering the world. And there's been many moments where I've shared something about my journey and I've heard about how other people feel about it. And it does take an expanded space that we have to hold within ourselves, or we can create within ourselves to be able to do that. So I want to reflect that gratitude right back to you.
Yeah.
For the work that you're doing, for even as readily as you've shared so many aspects of your own journey with me here today, and you do, you know, on this podcast and in the work and within your community. And for, again, everyone listening, the more we make space for our reality and we honor that, and then we do show up more in alignment, it is just creating that ripple of change in your world. And in my opinion, it's something to celebrate, to honor. And again, in my opinion, it is how we create change, literally world change.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Tell us about the book. I know we've touched on it briefly in the episode in different pieces, but yeah, tell us about it. Where can people find it? How can they connect with it? And what was your main intention with this book, so people can really understand the power behind it?
So my new workbook, How to Meet Yourself, it actually was a seed of intention that was probably just accumulating over time, but definitely really planted when I wrote the first book, How to Do the Work. It talks a lot about the first book, that is, of becoming conscious of these deep habits, these deep patterns, so we can begin to make new choices. For some of us, even becoming conscious to the reality that we can change no matter how old it is that we are. And it was not lost on me. And I like to always paint the visual of we're kind of like horses with those blinders on. I don't know if anyone ever seen, you know, horses going around, and they oftentimes, if they're, you know, in groups or there could be people or traffic around, have blinders on. And we are like that as humans. So when we're talking about being conscious of our habits, it became very clear to me that it would be very beneficial for people to have that guidebook, where to look, what to look at. And again, the workbook will begin with the body for all of the reasons that we talked about here today. And then it'll dive in, peel the onion back, as I like to say, into the emotional world, again, of stories we've created in childhood that are coloring our experiences, so that then we could create that space for that reconnection with
who we truly are. So my hope is that it's a livable roadmap of a resource, because we do want to honor the fact that this journey doesn't happen overnight, that we can revisit and stay, you know, in the portions of the workbook until we create new habits for ourselves. So the workbook can be found pretty much anywhere major books are sold. I do know that there is an Audible for anyone who does like to listen, though. You can get yourself a notebook and write your answers in separately if you are a listener. I'm a visual, and there's all actual places to write in the workbook itself if you do buy the hard copy. Though I also want to acknowledge one of my number one priorities is always making this information, these tools, this resources accessible, even if you don't have the opportunity to purchase the book. On my podcast, the Self Healer Soundboard that I co-host with my partner, Jenna, we've been making an intentional effort to, for the next several weeks into the upcoming months, to be taking listeners through the workbook itself, talking about the different concepts, giving the practical tools so that anyone who has access to podcasts, and you can find it, we have a YouTube channel that has the video of the podcast, so you can watch us while we're chatting through the workbook, or again, anywhere podcasts are platformed, you can have a listen. It's the Self-Healer Soundboard. Again, if you don't have access to the resources to purchase the workbook itself, I suggest you tune in the upcoming months, and we'll be devoting a lot of podcast episode airtime to taking listeners through the book itself. We open up for enrollment 3 times a year. So in May, we will open up enrollment again. All of the information can be found linked up always on the Instagram page, on the show notes, and we have a website too, theselfhealercircle.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Nicole. This has been an incredible episode. Thank you so much for your wisdom and for your time, and hoping you have a beautiful rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Jessica, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is The Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, The Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.